The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.
The final report of the Expert Task Force on the Future of Pharmacy has just been published at the Department of Health. For what it contains and for reaction to it, I'm joined on the line by Tom Murray, head of the Irish Pharmacy Union. He is actually at the launch at the moment. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Pat. How are you?
Very well. The Minister and his department have launched the final report with the recommendations. Is the Minister going along with these recommendations? Is this a final decision?
Yes, I think the Minister has accepted all of the recommendations in the task force report, and it is now his policy that he will move forward with those recommendations to implementation and that they become real in fact.
What are the principal recommendations then?
So the principal recommendations, I suppose, from a patient perspective, and that's, to be honest, that's where it's at the most important, is the implementation of the common clinical conditions management, which are eight conditions: allergic rhinitis, cold sores, conjunctivitis, impetigo, oral thrush, shingles, uncomplicated UTIs or cystitis, and thrush, vulvovaginal thrush. So those are conditions that pharmacists are well able to manage that are very, very commonly seen, that currently patients have to visit their GP to be treated. And going forward, once this is implemented, the Minister hopes to be early in the next calendar year, we will be able to prescribe prescription strength medicines to supply those patients. So that's increasing patient access to care. The second most important thing that patients will see, and this will take a bit of time to develop, is autonomous prescribing from pharmacists, whereby pharmacists will have far more prescribing powers, which will allow us to do medicine reviews. It will allow us to change and alter chronic conditions for patients. That will take some time to develop. Mm. It'll initially be protocol-based, and eventually it'll be done with an autonomous prescribing qualification.
Now, I'm not sure how this is going to work. I mean, if you have vulvo-vaginal thrush, I mean, are you expected to go into the little cubicle that the chemist has in the shop and show your vulvo-vaginal thrush for inspection to the pharmacist? How is it going to work?
I don't believe you will be, but I will say that patients have an awful lot of confidence in the counselling and the advice they get from pharmacists and pharmacies, and that the use of the consultation rooms in pharmacies, which are a legal requirement in every pharmacy, the use of those consultation rooms is expanding always, and more patients request to go into the consultation room to discuss their healthcare needs. I remember when we first opened our consultation room, I had to request patients to go in, and there was kind of a stigma around it, whereas now it's the patients who request to go in because they want to talk about more and more complex things. It's a recognition. The most important thing of this is that I think it's quite visionary. I think it is actually the Minister to be thanked for his view and his changing of pharmacy practice, which will have serious implications for patient care in terms of supporting slanted care, bringing care close to the patient, the right care at the right time for the right patient. Yeah. And going along with the policy of slanted care, that it will be the clinical need rather than the ability to pay, which will drive the patient access to care. It's an absolute recognition of the professionalism of pharmacy and the services we can deliver, and I thank the Minister for that.
So in a sense, though, isn't this particular development, the eight conditions you mentioned, it's kind of self-diagnosis on the part of the patient, saying, I think I have whatever it is. And something like conjunctivitis might be very easy for the pharmacist to have a look at the eye and say, yeah, you probably do.
It would be self-diagnosed in conjunction with the pharmacist, and it would be the pharmacist counselling. Ultimately, the pharmacist would have the decision on, do you have the condition and what is the most appropriate medicine to treat it?
Yeah. Will a pharmacist need, therefore, extra training to do this?
The pharmacist won't need any extra training for the common clinical conditions. As the autonomous prescribing develops, there will be more, initially a CPD based, a continuous professional development for those aged pharmacists like myself who are a long time out from our primary qualification. As it becomes more of a prescribing role, there will be a postgraduate qualification, as the Minister alluded to today, and ultimately it will become part of the undergraduate training for pharmacists.
Okay. Now, in terms of this extended prescribing, autonomous prescribing, as you put it, I mean, we're used to hearing about autonomous vehicles. You're really talking about the pharmacist having the power, his or herself, to write a prescription for the very first time.
Yes. You are. And yeah. that will probably be, will manifest itself in patients who may be on what we call polypharmacy, complex pharmacy mixtures, where we may be able to prescribe alternatives, or we may be able to change the mix of medicines that patients are on and review the polypharmacy, because polypharmacy is a serious issue for patients.
And currently, does the pharmacist have the right to second guess the prescriber and say, I've got a much cheaper generic here, do you want that one?
We have certain medicines which are generically substituted, which are actually are structured and are produced, a list from the HPRA and for the Department of Health of reference price medicines, where we are requested to supply the cheapest medicine. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't say we second guess our GP colleagues ever, but we work in conjunction with them and would have conversations and a multidisciplinary approach to care.
Now, suppose someone wants a repeat prescription, but you know it's out of date. I think the 6 months is being extended to a year anyway. But sometimes GPs charge a fee to renew a prescription without ever actually seeing the patient. You just say, this is the one I want. They write a prescription and you come back and pick it up later and pay whatever it is, €40. Will pharmacists have the power to actually renew a prescription in that way without the say-so of the GP?
Legally, we will have that power from the 1st of September. So legally, the prescription extension comes into effect from the 1st of December, where we'll be able to extend prescriptions from 6 months to a year.
Now, the other question is, pharmacists are high street stores, and that's the great thing about them, and that's what makes this development so interesting, that there's more of a ready availability of the pharmacist for these services. But then you can walk into several pharmacists in the one day and perhaps get stuff from each of them.
Well, pharmacists are extremely accessible, and we have seen the multi-visits to multi-pharmacists in the past in relation to codeine, but that's why we have protocols in place, and pharmacists will not be administering or prescribing or recommending medicines unless they are appropriate and safe for the patient. The key thing pharmacists do is a safe and appropriate use of medicines, and I don't believe that that will manifest as a huge problem. These common conditions are conditions that once the patient has them treated, I think the patient will be satisfied with the effectiveness and the clinical effectiveness of the treatment.
Yeah.
Of course, all of this is predicated on, as you and I have discussed in the past, the viability of the pharmacy sector and the sustainability of the pharmacy sector. And as I have informed the minister and I've informed his department over the last year on multiple occasions, that unless the retrospective pay claim that pharmacy has for outstanding for over 16 years is addressed, and unless there's substantial development in that, and unless the regressive fee, where we're paid less for the more work we do, is addressed, and unless the administrative burden is addressed, then the capacity for pharmacists to invest in their businesses to deliver these new services isn't there. So unfortunately, whilst I welcome the minister's innovative approach and his innovative report, unfortunately, the IPU is recommending to members that we won't be enacting at the present time those new roles and any of the implementing any of the task force recommendations until we see substantive movement on our pay claim.
Okay, so the minister, you've been calling on the minister to deliver this stuff. The minister has delivered, and you're saying, thank you very much, but we're not going to implement it until you give us money. That's the bottom line, yeah?
Well, it isn't. It isn't. We've been asking the minister to expand our role for years. The minister has finally recognised the potential in pharmacy, and I thank him for that. But we have been saying for 16 years that pharmacy is underfunded. We have had 12 meetings with the Department of Health in the last year alone, and at every one of those meetings, my role as president of the IPU has been to say to them, you need to deal with the fact that we have a non-viable sector, and unless you deal with the viability of the sector by looking at a 16-year pay freeze, where we earn less now than we were in 20 years ago. Our pay was cut in 2009, and we have increasing business costs, we have increasing staff costs, and we have had no support from the government in terms of the viability of the sector. We want to deliver this for patients. This could be great news for pharmacy, and it could be great news for patients, and we want to deliver this, and we want to support this, but we cannot do that unless the minister and the department seriously address the viability of the pharmacy sector.
Yeah, it's probably like a curate's egg, good in spots. In my town, you know, a new pharmacy has just opened up to accompany the three others that are already there. You know, so obviously for some it's easy enough to prosper, for others far more difficult.
Well, we have 10% of pharmacies that are losing money, and we have 30% of pharmacies that are on the brink of non-viability. Those are the facts that have been produced by the Fitzgerald Power report. Those are independent figures from Fitzgerald Power that they stand over from their assessment of pharmacy. So if we have 10% of pharmacies losing money and up to a third of pharmacies who are on the brink of non-viability, then I have to react to that and I have to be honest with those figures. And the viability of the pharmacy sector has to be addressed before we can deliver the minister's vision and bring this access to patient care and these increased roles for pharmacy.
Okay, and going forward, you say it'll be all part of pharmacy training for this autonomous prescribing. It has been done in other countries. What kind of conditions in other countries are pharmacists autonomously prescribing for?
Well, initially, it is the same conditions as we have here in the Common Conditions Service. So initially, the autonomous prescribing is around those. And I was at the World Pharmacy Council a couple of months ago, and I spoke to my colleagues from Canada, from Australia, and from Britain. And one of the most common things that they prescribe for is in complicated UTIs. But there are sections of Canada in particular where there is polypharmacy. So the pharmacist is changing prescriptions for patients in, for example, a residential care setting where they may be on multiple numbers of medicines, and the pharmacist is able to go in and perform a review, has to prescribe changes, and then implement those changes. So it's not that it's condition-specific, it's about the patient, and it's about patient-specific
care. But you're saying that a pharmacist would go into, say, a nursing home where someone has this polydrug regime, so that the pharmacist would be doing house calls?
Well, pharmacists already routinely visit nursing homes on a 6-monthly basis, and in conjunction with our GP colleagues, we do medicines reviews. What this will be allowing, the autonomous prescribing, is that the pharmacist could do it without the GP being present and without having the GP to have to come in as well. I serve as a nursing home, and it's my ethical and my legal obligation to go in every 6 months and review the patient's medicines anyway, and any recommendations I make, I then send to the GP. Under the autonomous prescribing, I believe it's envisioned the pharmacist could make those changes on his or her own.
Okay, some of the comments coming in. Pharmacists are not trained for this. A minor ailment diagnosis is only arrived at using diagnostic skills to exclude other more serious conditions. Also, there's been a shortage of community pharmacists, according to the IPU. How are employee pharmacists supposed to juggle all of this extra workload?
Okay, well, on the training, I would disagree and say that pharmacists are absolutely trained for common clinical conditions. And it's our experience over years that we can do these things. And for many of those conditions, we already diagnose them. We send a referral to the GP knowing full well what the patient is going to come back down with a prescription for. So I disagree with that. In terms of the number of pharmacists, yes, we have said that there is a shortage of pharmacists, and there are steps been made even within these recommendations to increase the number of pharmacists at each third level college. That will take time. But significantly, one of the things that all our members tell us about is the administrative burden. 90% of pharmacists are saying that they're feeling administrative burnout. And I'm quite confident that if the minister was to address the administrative burden as he promised to do at our conference, that the pharmacist's time spent shuffling paperwork around could be spent delivering patient care. And whilst there is a shortage of pharmacists, there's a shortage of capacity because of the administrative burden. And once the minister deals with our administration, we will have more time for patient-facing roles to deliver that care.
A couple of things. It's funny, Pat, most of these conditions affect women more than men. It's ridiculous that we have to pay €70 to get thrush treated. It's not like I can overdose on that medicine. It's over the counter in the UK. That's from Fiona in Dublin. Are the pharmacists clinically responsible if they prescribe and the patient becomes more unwell or reacts to meds prescribed by them? That's from Anya.
Pharmacists are responsible for every professional decision they make anyway under our professional indemnity insurance. Every piece of advice a pharmacist gives is indemnified, and we are responsible for that. In terms of the Fiona's comment, yes, as I said, these conditions are being implemented for prescribing and common clinical condition management by pharmacists in Britain, in Canada, in New Zealand, in the USA. So we are realigning with international experience, and each of those international experiences has been extremely positive in terms of professionalism and the safety and the appropriateness of the care provided by pharmacists.
An example here, a family member had a UTI recently while on holiday in France, no GP available, a urine sample was tested in the pharmacy and antibiotic given on the spot. Total cost, €25. Pharmacists in France have the ability to prescribe for some of the conditions discussed by your guest since late 2023. So there we are. Tom Murray, head of the Irish Pharmacy Union, thank you very much for joining us. Now, coming up later on News Talk, Jess Kelly will have a look at the new Google products that are coming up.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.